the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Radio program. Stay tuned,
girl.
So it says here, both were overseen by Quincy Jones, already a much admired musician, composer, arranger, conductor, and producer, who worked with Count Basie, Ray Charles, and Duke Ellington. That's seduction right there. Now listen to this. Quincy Jones had worked with Count Basie, Ray Charles, Duke Ellington, Ella Fitzgerald, Dizzy Gillespie, Lionel Hampton, and Frank Sinatra. The two first discussed working together while Mr. Jones was supervising the music for the 1978 film The Wiz, in which Michael Jackson played the Scarecrow. "I saw his sensitivity and his focus," said Quincy Jones, age 76. Epic, Jackson's label, thought that Quincy Jones was too steeped in jazz to produce what became Off the Wall. But Jackson and his management team insisted, and Epic relented. When the project began, Jackson had demos of two songs. Mr. Jones had a track from the funk band, the Brothers Johnson, that needed a melody and lyrics. Everything else came together once they became part of a team. "Don't Stop Till You Get Enough," the album opener composed by Jackson, is set up by the syncopated percussion that Jackson and his sister Janet, I didn't know Janet did that, and brother Randy played on a cassava, cowbell, and glass bottle and had recorded for the demo version. Suddenly Jackson screams and the orchestra explodes. Sweeping strings, punchy horns, bass drums, claps form the foundation under Jackson's vocal. "It's a busy track, but not cluttered. Mr. Jones told me his big band experience helped him organize all the sounds." That's true. Quincy Jones is an arranger, really, not a producer. The two remaining tunes, "Rock With You," written by Rod Temperton, a composer Mr. Jones still favor, and Get On The Floor, built on a riff by bassist Louis Johnson of the Brothers Johnson. On "Rock With You," the mood is airy and seductive. On the latter, bold and assertive. Now, from what I understand, the plan was to have Michael Jackson work with Gamble and Huff. That would have been nice. It wouldn't have been like this, though. Easy, Michael. Easy, easy. Let's move on. Working day and night. Now, the Journal pop critic says it's a busy song. Oh, no, he's saying here the album's third song also rises from percussion that Jackson had recorded earlier with his siblings. So Janet is involved with this in the background here. Plucked guitars are its core, too. Mr. Jones omitted orchestral strings this time. But Jerry Hay and Greg Phalanges did the horn and rhythm charts, respectively. I think I favor Off the Wall, if I had to pick. Emil Carr from Brooklyn, he says... He asks a good question about Tiny and Toy. He says, does T.I. know she's doing this show? Putting it out there like that. Now, I can tell you, I think T.I. knows she's doing this show, but I don't know if T.I. is going to be pleased with Tiny and Toya when he gets a chance to watch it. I don't know if they're going to survive jail and this series. Into Off the Wall. And he says here the arrangement for Off the Wall foreshadows the title track of Thriller, wonderful point. This is actually the beginning of Thriller. It starts on Off the Wall with this track. Good point. He says this foreshadows the title track of Thriller, with its bass synth, cymbals, insistent backbeat, and plucked guitar as the rhythmic platform. Mr. Temperton wrote both songs and had a hand in arranging their rhythmic tracks. While Thriller lives in the memory as the soundtrack to a long-form music video, it's also an expert piece of pop. So is its predecessor. Throughout the Off the Wall album, Quincy Jones challenged Michael Jackson to expand his vocal range. "I wanted him to sing down low," he recalled. "A lot of his habits came from Motown. They wanted him to sing high. But by then we had a relationship of trust and honesty with each other." Quincy had to work with him. It's like Dr. Dre when he talked about working with Snoop the first time. He had to do a lot of work. Let me read a couple comments regarding science and God. Emil Carr from Brooklyn says, "Greetings, brother. Interesting conversation. For me, the question is God a creation of man? Since without man, there would be no concept of God. And since before anything or anyone, there was God, therefore we, all living things, aspects of God, therefore, are aspects of God. Therefore, we are gods having a human experience. And so for plants, animals, etc., God is present in all living things." I think Proverbs 22 and Psalms 90. Let me check this, Emil Carr. I'm going to give you two scriptures to read about God being before anything and everyone else. One from Psalms, one from Proverbs. Glenn from Philly says, "Peace said, great topic. I characterize myself as being a bit naive on this topic, but I never saw a reason to separate God from science. If God created the heavens and the earth, did he not create science as well? Could it be that science, mathematics, physics, etc. are God's way of providing us with additional insight? A peek at the blueprint of physical creation. I don't see them as being mutually exclusive at all." This is a nice track. I think Quincy's big band background really comes in here.
Producer Quincy Jones was recently asked to speak about his experiences during the recording of Off the Wall.
I mean, Michael's an amazing songwriter, and it is so highly personal. Usually when you're working with songwriters, and I work with a lot, I mean, with singer-songwriters, I work with a lot of them. So it's Smelly, you know, he dug in, you know, he dug in. And some of the times he was not sure it was going the right way, but after a while, you know, he got it. And by the second album, he wrote 3 songs on the first album. He wrote 4 on Thriller.
Ending whackness in the name of blackness. You are listening to the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Show only at blackcoffeechannel.com.
Songwriter Rod Temperton reflects on his first experience with writing for Michael.
Well, back in 1979, I was working in New York on an album for Heatwave with Phil Ramone. And one night, Quincy called the studio and asked me if I would could write something for Michael Jackson. He was going to do Michael's first solo album. So I said, okay, I'll do my best to do one song. Because we were working in the studio from 10 in the morning till 3 or 4 the following morning. So in the end, I wrote three songs in order for Michael and Quincy to choose one song to go on the album. And they booked the studio in Los Angeles at the weekends when I wasn't working. And I flew in over the weekends to cut the tracks. And at that point, I still hadn't met Michael. Michael didn't come to the studio then. And the following week, I came back again, the following weekend, to do the vocals with Michael. We did all the backgrounds on all three tracks on the Saturday afternoon. And then on the Sunday afternoon, we did all the three lead vocal tracks. And Michael was amazing because he stayed up the whole of that Saturday night to learn the lyrics off so that he wouldn't have to read them on off the paper. It's quite interesting. I do remember the very first session for Off the Wall that I did. That this was on the Saturday that they flew me in from New York on this Saturday afternoon. And Quincy had said to me on the phone a couple of days before, asked me what kind of musicians I needed to record the tracks. So I said, well, two guitar players and a keyboard player, drums, bass. And I arrived that afternoon, came from the airport directly to the studio. Quincy met me at the door, basically took me in the main studio room where all the musicians were getting ready to play, and said, "Here's Rod, hit it." And now, this was really my first session outside my own band, because I'd, been playing music and been in Heatwave for 3 or 4 years, and so I was very used to that kind of a situation and dealing with pickup musicians in the studio making those albums, maybe, but not with a situation where I was, just walking in cold and meeting a whole bunch of people I never knew, and all very famous names in the business. And I particularly remember when the first horn date of that album, and Jerry Hay came in with all the horn players. And I felt really inadequate, walking in and with my little notes of what I wanted them to do. But it was one of those things where you're in a situation where you're put in the room there and everybody's looking at you, and it's either you say something or get out of there.
Right.
And fortunately, I opened my mouth and said something. So, it all worked out nicely, and we came away with an exciting album. And I said to Quincy at the end of the session, "Well, which song do you choose do you want for the record?" And he said, "Well, we want all three." Rock With You, the title track, Off the Wall, and a song called Burn This Disco Out. I knew that, I could tell from Michael that the melodies he would sing on up-tempo songs, he was very rhythmically driven. And so I tried to write melodies that were short notes and had a lot of short notes to give him some staccato rhythmic things he could do. I think the Off the Wall title song gives you the best example. That kind of melody, rather than really long note, long line melodies. And the other thing I knew from his previous records is that he loved harmony work. And with, that's really the side of me that I would have brought from Heatwave, because Heatwave was a very harmonically driven group. And so I kind of mixed the harmony segments of my music with this new idea of the shorter note melodies for Michael, and came up with Off the Wall and Burn This Disco Out.
There's also an enthusiasm that only happens when I see someone who's original. That came through loud and clear with Michael Jackson. When Michael was 19, when we first worked together, he was co-starring in, and I was the musical director. I was resisting it for the score of the movie version of The Wiz. He asked if I could help him find a producer for his first solo album, which he was going to do on Epic. And I told him, Michael, man, my plate is seriously full because we have to concentrate on pre-recordings. But I'll think about it later. And so far, you don't even have a song in the picture, so I'm trying to get you a song. They don't know who you are, you know, outside of Ease On Down the Road with Diana Ross. So as we rehearsed the musical numbers up in this hotel in Brooklyn, Sidney Lumet's blocking the scene with the principals, I could start to see Michael learning everybody's lines, and he knew everybody's dance steps, and he had the makeup 5 hours every morning, but he didn't miss a thing. I've never seen a mind sharper in my life. And I saw, because everybody said nobody can make him any bigger than he already is. I felt a lot of things inside that nobody had heard before. Untapped vocal equipment that could take him even much further. So we took a shot. And part of his role for the Scarecrow, he'd pull out little pieces of paper and say, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, Confucius, da-da-da-da-da, Kierkegaard, Plato, etc. And I remember in one of the other rehearsals, he pulled out another piece and said, blah, 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 Socrates. Hey, hello, Socrates. After 3 days of Socrates, no one corrected him, Diana or the director. Because Diana's usually first, you know, but she straightens you out quick. And I was pulling him aside and whispered to him. I said, Michael, I think before it becomes a habit, I think you should know that the man's name is pronounced Socrates, not Socrates. And he opened his eyes, and innocent as he could be, he said, really? I said, really, yeah. It's Socrates. And right then and there I said, I think I'd like to take a shot at producing your new record because I felt something else in him that I didn't feel before. So he told the executives at the record company and his managers, Freddie DeMann and Ron Weiser, that they wanted me to produce the album. Everybody in the company said, no way. Black and white executives said, no way. Gamble and Hush should do it. Quincy's too jazzy. He's only done 18 years with Leslie Gore and Brothers Johnson. What does he know about that genre? But Blackless managers, they wouldn't take no for an answer. And I told Michael, don't worry about it, man. We'll be fine, you know. Fortunately for us, the executives finally caved in. And up to that point, Michael's most emotional moment was Ben. He was singing about a love affair with a rat. So I knew I had a lot of room to play with then. So I steered him to a lot of songs like She's Out of My Life, which I was saving for Sinatra. And he cried at the end of it every time. And so I just left it on the record, the crying, because it was a very real emotion, you know. And we had to find some stuff with more songs with content and about living creatures with two legs, you know, instead of rodents. And the result was off the wall. An album that featured Rock With You, She's Out of My Life, and Don't Stop Till You Get Enough. And it was the biggest black album in the history at that time. And they were freaked out. It saved everybody's jobs. It said he can't do it and everything else. And I love to be underestimated. I love it. 3 years later, we recorded our next album, Thriller, and its impact was beyond our wildest belief expectations. We did it fast, $569,000, and became the biggest selling album in the history of music, selling anywhere between, we still don't know, 67 to 104 million albums. We still can't find out. This was pre-RIAA. Anyone who says they figured out how to make records that sell more than 50 million records is lying and smoking Kool-Aid. That worked like that. You just find a group of songs to touch you and give you goosebumps. And that's why I go by my goosebumps. I don't need survey groups or anything like that. And let the rest take care of itself. I remember getting this call from Bob Pittman in 1980. He was the top executive at Warner's Communications, and he said, Quincy, I think people want to see music as much as they want to hear it. I said, I didn't know what you was talking about. So he started to describe this idea that, you know, a new idea is a new idea, and I'm always turned on when we get out of the box. And Steve Ross, he believed, he could see around the corner. He said, go do it, man. And a few years later, Steve asked me, Q, what's the next Michael Jackson record you're releasing? And The Girl Is Mine with Paul McCartney, and Michael was already out. And I said, Billie Jean, then we're going to double clutch it with Beat It. He said, Bob, that goes on MTV next week. It's the first time a black artist was ever on MTV. The next year, we put out the single of Thriller. People didn't get it at first. All this off-the-wall stuff. Here's Vincent Price doing Edgar Allan Poe stuff on and everything else, because we were crazy back then. But, man, that we got to be crazy to be in this business in the first place. That's why I'm glad I'm in the right the company. We all crazy. Or we wouldn't be here. And stay crazy, man. Stay crazy, because you're going to be, you're the soul of the world. They were in uproar, and they quickly got into it. The album, after being out 13 or 14 months, went up to 1.5 million copies a week in sales for 4 months, which was number one for 37 weeks. And it freaked me out because I was worried about Michael, because in June of 84, People magazine did a cover on him with no interview. He didn't do interviews. The next week they did another cover on him with no interviews. And the third week, interviewing the whole issue about him and no interviews. And I think Mike kind of snapped him there a little bit, you know. Because if you're not spiritually grounded, you know, it's a strange animal. You got to be ready for success, boy. Because it's, you think you deserve it, all that adulation, all that money, or you think you don't deserve it and you're fooling everybody. MTV changed the music business, and Michael and MTV would not have been able to do what they did without each other. They rode each other to glory, both of them, in a big way. I adore him. He's touched by God. And when as I said before, when he was making Thriller, we bonded and became very, very, very close friends.
Jim Fusilli of the Wall Street Journal goes on to write, says, by now the bass synthesizer had become part of the pop vocabulary, and it introduces the album's opener, Wanna Be Starting Something, a dance tune with horns arranged by Mr. Hay that was originally proposed for Off the Wall. It serves as a bridge from the earlier album, but it has a leaner, more abiding feel. It ends with a long vocal recitation of a line from Manu Dibango's Soul Makusa. Now, next is After the Pop Gem, Baby Be Mine. Let me give you a little bit of Baby Be Mine. Rod Temperton wrote this. No, we don't want to be starting something again. Baby Be Mine, written by Rod Temperton. Yeah, here we go. I didn't know Rod Temperton was in Heat Wave. This song right here, I always like. One of the underrated tracks. Baby Be Mine. Sing to him, Mike.
I don't need no dreams when I'm by your side. Ooh. Every moment takes me to paradise. Darling, let me hold you. I warm you in my arms and melt your fears away. Show you.
Yeah, this still has some of the off-the-wall feel to it.
Listening to the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Show only at blackcoffeechannel.com.
You are all the future.
Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Show only at blackcoffeechannel.com.
One more. This is Thriller. Let me just comment on this. Facili writes, Billie Jean also was a Jackson composition sung with Icy Fire. Its melody rests on what may be the deepest groove in pop history, formed by a battery of synthesizers. At the chorus, Mr. Jones opens the track, allowing in a chiming guitar to leave in the relentless, bottom-heavy rhythm. Now, I made a point, and I've said this repeatedly, about song placement. I thought this is one thing that Puffy actually does pretty well. It's a mistake that Jay-Z made on the Blueprint 2 album. Very poor song placement that Jay-Z had on Blueprint 2. But this is the genius of Quincy Jones right here. He says here, and I'll just read what I wrote again. He says, at the chorus, Mr. Jones opens the track, allowing in a chiming guitar to leave in the relentless, bottom-heavy rhythm. Lush synthesizers add movement to the backdrop. Quincy Jones says, when you come out of Billie Jean, man, this is heavy. He says, when you come out of Billie Jean, which is just three chords, you need a kaleidoscopic harmonic structure, Mr. Jones said. You know the ear wants that. Steve Porcaro composed the music for the next tune, a lovely ballad. He says, Toto sent over a demo and Rod Temperton and I listened to it, but the first two songs didn't do much for us, he told me. Then the third song came out and I said, yeah. The next day, Mr. Jones asked John Bettis to write the lyrics to what became Human Nature. So they placed the song Human Nature right after Billie Jean. And Quincy Jones factored in. He says, when you come out of Billie Jean, which is just three chords, you need a kaleidoscopic harmonic structure. You know, the ear wants that. The performance floats on guitar and bass notes at first. The brass is barely noticeable. Mr. Jones allows the chorus to arrive without additional fanfare, thus drawing in the listener. Jackson sings it beautifully, allowing his voice to meld with the whole.
Listening to the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Show only at blackcoffeechannel.com.
He says, Thriller concludes with the snappy PYT, Pretty Young Thing, which brought Jackson together with his sisters Janet and Latoya, and The Lady in My Life, a gorgeous ballad written by Mr. Temperton featuring Paul Jackson on guitar. Janet is in the background on this.
Where did you come from, baby?
Did he say tenderoni, you got to be? Tenderoni?
Pretty young.
I hate to do this to you all. The greatest Michael Jackson song ever, chorus wise. Don't laugh. This is it. Yup. You thought I wasn't gonna go there? All of you all worshiping Bad, Thriller, Off the Wall, Dangerous, and History. Excuse me. This is it. Rockwell featuring Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson killed this chorus. I will argue this with anyone. This is the greatest cameo ever. Speak to him.
I'm just an average man with an average life. I work from 9 to 5. Hey, hell, I pay the price.
This was it. I don't hear nothing about Berry Gordy, nepotism. Michael kills this. 1980, what was this, 1982? Fire trucks, three of them. Go tell someone Cedric Muhammad said it. Michael at his best. By the way, I mean, it was no secret why this song went to number one and stayed there. And you talk about a favor.
Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Show only at blackcoffeechannel.com.
Just a little touch, but maybe showers remind me of psycho tumor. That's why I always feel like somebody's watching me, and I have no privacy. Oh, I always feel like somebody's watching me, who's playing tricks on me.
In the name of blackness, you are listening to the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Show only at blackcoffeechannel.com.
We'll get to the Pope's encyclical next week, as well as Victor Ortiz, my second favorite boxer. But you had to pump Rockwell featuring Michael Jackson.
Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Radio program. Stay tuned to the Black Coffee Channel, home of the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Radio program.
July 15th, 2009. We covered a lot of ground. Lamar Odom, might you be leaving? If you go, Celtics got this thing. Become a, I don't like the word fan, but a supporter of the show's fan page on Facebook. Minister Farrakhan to speak July 26th, finalcall.com. Get the latest. We can continue the conversation. God and science, do they mix? I think so. If you have knowledge of self, there's no conflict. What did Jay-Z say at BET? Rest in peace to the king.
Jackson belonged to black people, and that black people understood Michael Jackson in a way that maybe whites didn't. And the studies show it. Pew poll shows that 8 out of 10 African Americans were following this closely. There are other polls that show 2 out of 3 African Americans were following this very closely. How do you respond to that?
Well, black people understand me, and you can ask most black people that have ever heard me, know something about me. They understand me. They don't view me as the media has portrayed me. And whenever you become strong, whenever your truth will undermine the falsehoods that the society seems to be built upon, you become a threat. So when you become a threat to the powers that be, they use the power of the media first to demagnetize you by making you appear as what you are not. And after they take you away from the magnetic appeal that you have with the people, then you are either assassinated or you are made poor and raggedy. So when you get back to your people, you have no drawing power. And you have no money. So to strip Michael of his legacy, to strip him of the catalog of the Beatles and Elvis, to strip him of the great financial strength that he potentially has, is to give him back to us in his move toward self-awareness, self-love. He always loved humanity. The problem was, he did not have that love so much of himself, but he was growing to see the beauty of himself.
You said he didn't have that love of himself. Talk to me more about
that. In this way, most black people, not only here, but in the Caribbean, in South America, Central America, in Africa, we have been the victims of the tyranny of white supremacy and black inferiority.
Out there saying it's a coma, and you've got these other reports that generally, who do people believe?
And that's the tough thing. To do inside business, Extra is a telepictures show along with TMZ. TMZ run by Harvey Levin, who has been known to be very reputable in the past. So it has become a website of record. OK Magazine, you can take what you want from OK Magazine, trying to, say that they've confirmed it as well. I mean, the LA Times, that you have to stand on that record. And the LA Times, with all these reports of Michael Jackson, are these multiple reports of Michael Jackson being dead, the LA Times coming out and saying he's in a coma, that really puts a big question mark over all the reports that he has passed away.
So Carlos, I'm going to cut you off because we do have now word, according to the Los Angeles Times, the Los Angeles Times is reporting that Michael Jackson has died. Los Angeles Times saying Michael Jackson has died, 50 years old. The Times had been reporting as of just a few minutes ago he had been in a coma again, but that is at this point irrelevant. Michael Jackson, according to Los Angeles Times, has died at the age of 50. For immediate reaction, let's go to NBC's Dan Abrams, who has also covered Michael Jackson for many years. And Dan, your reaction? Okay, actually, let's go to Courtney Hazley. Courtney, the LA Times reporting that he has died. I wonder if you can put this in some sort of immediate sort of
guys,
perspective.
Guys, the LA Times reporting he's dead.